A Pentecost Sunday Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on May 26, 1985, entitled Visions and Dreams, Reaching Towards Century 21. The texts for the sermon are Exodus 3, verse 2, and Acts 2, verse 17. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
The day of Pentecost is one of those historical days. Are you hearing me? It's one of those historical days in which God's plan of redemption moves another step along the way. It's a day like Christmas and like Easter. It's a day when God poured out His Spirit, bringing, as it were, to culmination that which He had been effecting in the lives and the history of His people. The day of Pentecost is the day in which the disciples and a few gathered around them and gathered with them, who had witnessed the crucifixion and the resurrection of Jesus, who were aware that He was alive, but also aware that He was no longer historically accessible to them, became aware that He was in fact with them. And so in the New Testament, we hear them speak of the Spirit of God, or the Holy Spirit, or the Spirit of Jesus, or the Spirit of Christ. We understand their attempt to give expression to that which was inexpressible, namely, that the one eternal God had revealed Himself in the face of Jesus, who was with them historically, tangibly, concretely, accessible and available, but now so no longer, but now with them, undeniably so, a presence, a power. What happened on the day of Pentecost is a mystery. We can't begin to unlock that mystery, but the best evidence that, as a matter of fact, something happened is the fact that something happened afterwards. Ragtag disciples, fearful, afraid, gathering together, not knowing what was next, transformed into flaming evangels who turned the world upside down. The story of the Christian church. Amazing story. Overcoming the Roman Empire itself in a matter of a couple of centuries. Making the imperial city the first city of the church. It's amazing. Witness to the fact that something happened at Pentecost. God launched this Christian movement which comes up and envelops us. This movement which now is in our hands through the power of God to continue until that day when the kingdoms of this world become the kingdoms of our God and of His Christ. A presence, a power, undeniably so, God in their midst, God's grace, God's power. It's always so. We celebrate the birthday of the church, and yet we know we're rooted in Israel, and Israel was inaugurated through the act of God when He called Moses. Now, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of the fathers, they were certainly the forerunners, the ancestors of the nation Israel. But Israel as a people were created in the Exodus, and God began the process when He called Moses and called him to lead His people to freedom. Moses had his own personal Pentecost, as it were. The story of the burning bush is familiar. I can't rehearse the story of Moses this morning. We don't have time for that, but you'll remember he was educated in all of the culture and all of the learning of Egypt. Destined for greatness. Yet he identified with his own people, and when he saw an Egyptian taskmaster treating harshly one of his kinfolk, in an act of violence, he killed the man. And when the deed became known, he fled for his life. And he found himself on the backside of Midian, tending flock, which was the work of women and children in that day. But Moses was so confused, so deep in introspection, that he was fit for nothing but to spend long, solitary days and nights trying to figure out who he was, what had happened, what he had done. We can't penetrate the mystery of the experience of the burning bush either, but Chaim Potok, the Jewish novelist, using his novelist skills, but when he's turned historian in the history of his people, has a fascinating analysis. It's a kind of a psychologizing of the mind of Moses, but it's fascinating, and it makes a lot of sense to me. He says, you know, a man like Moses, with all of his training and all of his education, had been geared through all of that to treat slaves like so many cattle. And yet in an act of violence, he had risen up and he had struck a blow for freedom, for the dignity of that slave. And as he sat in the wilderness trying to figure out what he had done, what had happened, he struggled with all of those things that were a part of him because he had all of Egypt woven into him. Slaves are no account, just economic property. Not persons, no dignity, no rights. And then he got to thinking, it's not true. Those slaves may be coarse and crass, but they are every much as human as the young Egyptians with whom I studied and grew up. And then he began to think further, if the gods of Egypt justify that view of slavery, then the gods of Egypt must be false. Have you ever begun to struggle? Have you ever wrestled with a religious question that threatened your whole system? Moses was struggling. Who are these gods of Egypt that could justify the treatment of persons as slaves, as cattle, as animals? Certainly, If slaves are also human, if they should be treated with dignity, then they should be free. And if the Egyptian gods say otherwise, then the Egyptian gods must be false. But Moses could not conceive of such an idea coming from other than God. And if God, then what God? Not the Egyptian gods, not the gods of the Canaanites. What God then? Do you suppose that all of this was churning in this man? It's not too far-fetched to believe it may have well been so. Educated, deep, profound, sensitive, sitting on the backside of Midian, long solitary days and nights, ripe for his own personal Pentecost, for the voice of God that said, Moses, set my people free. Moses resisted. Who wouldn't? It's no particular blessing to be chosen to bear the burden of the Lord. It is not all glory. More often, suffering is the prelude to whatever glory may come. He resisted and finally obeyed. He was called to a mission. He went to Pharaoh. He led the people to freedom. And as Chaim Potok says, a chain of events was set in action that eventuated in a nation, the only nation of that great fertile crescent, still alive today, still impacting the human race. Moses had a vision. Moses had a dream. Moses swam upstream against all opposition. Moses led Israel to freedom. I don't know what happened at the burning bush. Some kind of a manifestation of God. And a man was convinced that he was being confronted by God. And he responded to the heavenly vision. It was that way with the disciples too. Dull, fearful, and then suddenly flaming evangelists, telling good news, turning the world upside down. The best evidence that something really happened to Moses was what happened following that event in Moses' life. The best evidence that something happened at Pentecost is the history of the Christian church, which ensued from that moment when men and women were transformed, absolutely transformed, by the presence and the power of the living God. Pentecost is that time when God convinced a handful of people, nondescript, that He was a living God who had a mission for them to perform. That's Pentecost. And as we think about it, one wonders, what of us? Where are things going? Will things just go on and gradually wind down? Or will things eventually blow up? One wonders what God has in mind for the further course of history. Still, there is a people of God. Still, God is God. And yet, the Christian church is certainly not the dynamic center out of which the world is being shaped. One wonders why not. Commission hasn't changed. The power and the presence is just as available. There are more of us. Our resources are greater. One wonders if it would not be possible to turn the world upside down today if there were those who were united in mind and heart, waiting expectantly in prayer for the manifestation of a presence and a power. Maybe we're on the wrong side. Maybe if we really want to know who we are, maybe we have to see ourselves as part of Pharaoh's court. Maybe we are hardening our heart against what the Spirit is saying in the structures of society today. Could it be? Are we so heavily vested in a world of the status quo that we could not identify with a movement of the Spirit that would set His people free? Do you blame Pharaoh? He had sworn on the Bible to uphold the constitution of Egypt, to defend its borders and seek its prosperity. And an upstart herdsman, Moses, says, set the slaves free. Pull the rug from under the economic prosperity of Egypt. Do you blame Pharaoh? I mean, couldn't we make a fantastic case today on Pharaoh's behalf? Maybe that's why nothing's happening through us. Or maybe the church. Maybe we just have become an institution all tied up within ourselves. Someone said to me the other day, I am convinced that as soon as a movement becomes an institution, its primary reason ceases to exist. or its primary reason for existence ceases and is replaced by its primary motive from that point on, which is to perpetuate itself. It's true. Maybe we just play church. We do it nicely, don't we? It's comfortable and it's cozy. Maybe we're the laid-back generation that just fears too much religious fanaticism. We're cool. It's exactly right. Heinrich Heine, the German Jewish poet, was standing before the cathedral in Amiens, France, one day, and his friend said to him, "Heinrich, why can't we build a pile like that anymore?" And Heinrich Heine said, "It's simple." He said, "That pile was built with people with conviction. We moderns have opinions. But to build a cathedral, a Gothic cathedral, you need more than an opinion. You need a conviction." I was interested in the TV dramatization of Christopher Columbus, who had to fight against the stream, who had to fight the fickleness of popular endorsement, who had to fight the fickleness of the throne and the powers around him, who tenaciously clung to his dream and who finally said to the king, "You would not have a new world today if I had not stubbornly insisted on realizing the dream, and I realize that nothing great has ever been done in the world by anybody except those who have been willing to suffer, who've caught the vision, who've dreamed the dream, and who will die for it if need be. The reason not more happens around here is that I'm too interested in having it rather comfortable and you affirming me and liking me rather than using me in a way in which God could perhaps tear loose the mask, cause a rift in the sky, baptize us with power, make us drunk with His glory, and use us as an instrument of His purposes." The future will come. But will we willy-nilly just be tossed about as pawns on the sea of history? Or will we capture the moment reaching toward century 21 to shape it and to claim it for Jesus Christ, our Lord? I believe that's what Pentecost is all about. It is a day to celebrate, in which to rejoice, in which to celebrate the nearness of God, the presence and the power. But it's not a comfortable, cozy day. It's a day in which God says, "Who will go for me?" The God of the I Am, the God who says, "I will be whom I will be, I will cause to be, I will be there." The God who knew of the plight of the Israelite slaves, the God who understood the situation of the first century, and the God who is equal to the 20th century and will be to century 21, and will use those who dare to dream to cause His purposes to prevail until the kingdoms of this world become the kingdoms of our God and of His Christ. That's what Pentecost promises. Blessed be His holy name.